This is the one with a girl in unconvincing drag, and a Captain Pike who isn't in a futuristic wheelchair, and pirates, and violence, and tons of bloody murder. It's called The Smugglers. Here we go. We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space,
counting Daleks, Thalan Ood, and the Cybertronic race.
Some Taurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales,
and the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales.
Who back when?
Reviewing all of who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who Back When?
Hello and welcome to episode C028 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin. Yes, I am. And this is yet another solo mission. Why? Is this your first encounter with Who Back When? If so, hello and welcome to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I've been over this before, but I'm going to summarize it super, super quickly. I'm just going to bullet point it. Tons and tons of episodes in the Hartnell era are lost. Yes, it's sad. We know this. Get over it. It happened. And because I have such a big heart that I don't want to inflict the viewing of these missing episodes on my co-hosts, I say I don't want to inflict it upon them. I simply cannot convince anyone to do it, okay? It's a little bit of a ball ache to do it. I'm doing them on my own. It's not too bad. I've done a few so far. People have liked them. Thanks, by the way, for that. And just to let you guys know, because there are quite a few of these missing episodes left, and it's maybe slightly more painful than to watch something that is perfectly intact, but it's not that bad. Despite that, it's taking me a little bit longer to do this thoroughly than it would if I could actually watch them. So what I'm going to do henceforth, I'm kind of going to speed through it. You'll see what I mean. I'm still going to go through it plot point by plot point, but I will not be as meticulous as with other episodes. That way we can get through all of these lost ones relatively quickly. We can get to Pertwee, even though I'm really looking forward to going through Troughton Land, but we can get to Pertwee where it's a little bit more easily digestible. And that way, you fine ladies and gentlemen of podcast land can enjoy a classic review on the Who Back When show much more frequently. I hope you don't object. Further to that, in the whole, this is the episode I'm reviewing at the moment, whatever, paragraph of this podcast episode, this is the penultimate William Hartnell serial, The Smugglers. Holy shit. After this, there is just one left. The 10th planet. Then he will regenerate into Patrick Troughton. So there's so little left. There is so little left. And I really, really miss him already. Oh God. Okay. I'm getting a little bit emotional. One more thing before we jump into this podcast review. Proper thing. It's not a terrible episode. It's not a terrible serial. It's really not great, though. And I really don't want to shit too much on Hartnell at this point, because, as I said, we only have two more serials left. But despite that, I will. So deduce from that what you will. Okay, here we go. The Smugglers, episode 28. It's a historical. It is also, I'm pretty sure, and someone in podcast land, possibly JD, will be able to confirm or deny this. Actually, I think JD was the one who said this. This is the last historical episode for, like, fucking decades, man. Like, crazy long times. We're gonna have some pseudo-historicals, as I recall, but this is it. Bingo. Let's jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Bite-sized chunk of Who.
The Doctor, Ben, and Polly materialize on a beach in 17th century Cornwall and are embroiled in a bloody, literally, tale of smugglers and corruption. They encounter a church warden who for no apparent reason shares a mysterious clue with them and are subsequently separated as Doc is abducted by Captain Pike, who wants to know what the clue was, and Ben and Polly are wrongfully accused of murder and apprehended by the authorities. Turns out, though, the authorities are in cahoots with Captain Pike and there's hidden treasure somewhere in this quiet village. Beast Now over, you are welcome. Okie dokie, this is a four-part serial, and every single one of those four parts is missing. And so what I'm watching, or what I watched and what I'm reviewing here, is the Loose Cannon Productions reconstruction thereof, as I tend to do with these lost episodes. I know there's an audiobook version of this, very much like there was an audiobook version of... Actually, very much like I imagine there's an audiobook version of all of these lost stories, but at the very least, very much in line with the audiobook version that I also reviewed when I did the Daleks Master Plan podcast episode. But that was a 12-episode epic. There was no way I wasn't also going to listen to the audiobook to get some proper clarity and, you know, contextual information. In this case, I just sort of cannot be asked. Okay, here we go. Part 1. We have a new title sequence. Thank you very much, Loose Cannon Productions. I don't know if that is an accurate representation of what the actual serial looked like, but there is a new title sequence. And the name of the series turns up, mid-Smoke in the Vortex-style animation. Very, very cool. Nicely done. They materialize. They're on a beach, as I said in the B-Scout. They're on a beach somewhere in Cornwall. We don't know that yet. It's the 17th century. We don't know that either. And the Doctor is super-duper indignant and, like, spouting exposition left and right. He's going, those are the dematerialization controls, and see that scanner, that's what I call a scanner. He also adds, soundbite,
I have no control over where I land. Neither can I choose the period in which I land in.
Superfluous concluding preposition there, Doc, but regardless, he had no trouble doing that just now. Like, literally, in the previous serial, he went with Dodo F-ing Chaplet to London in 1966. He plonked her right there in, I can't remember where it was. He took her home is the point I'm trying to make. Zero time lost. He clearly is in control. Whatever. They've materialized in a cave. We look at the scanner, or they look at the scanner. Big Finish. Not Big Finish. God damn it. Big Finish, you're great as well. You deserve a shout out. But this is not a Big Finish production. This is a Loose Cannon. God damn it. What am I doing? I need to script these things. Okay. There's a gorgeous scanner animation is what I was trying to say. Very nicely done. I'll probably include a screenshot of that. And they look at this thing. They're very clearly in a cave. Ben, however, still thinks they're in London in 1966. He even name drops it. He even says, like, we're in Fitzroy Square. Quite obviously, as I can tell by looking at that cave. They pop out. Ben is a little bit stressed to realize that he is actually on a beach. And Polly tragically quotes Vicky and goes,
but it's a super place!
Whee! Ugh, Vicky vibes. Anyway, the kids run off, and the Doctor stays on screen, and I'm sorry, there's another quote here, but I just have to do it. He goes,
you may know where you are, my dears, but not when.
And then he adds, laughing,
oh, I can foresee oodles of trouble.
You sadistic son of a bitch. Yes, Doctor, such as the kind of trouble that may get them killed or flayed or castrated or worse. Why are you laughing? Anyway, they climb up the hill, spot a church, and at this point, I have a couple of bones to pick. Number one, the Doctor says, most churches like that have been around for centuries. Which, I think, for a man who is completely detached from time, is kind of a weird thing to say. And number two, Polly suggests they continue their church conversation on the train back to London. That's it. She just wants to get back to London. She is completely unconvinced that they've traveled through time. But very obviously, I mean, excuse me, they have very obviously traveled through space, right? She was just on a beach. She was just in a cave before that. She's now in front of a fucking church from the 17th century, or possibly before that. What the hell, man? Or, you know, Polly. Actually, not saying what the hell, man, in this case, addressing Polly. Not too weird a thing, but we'll get to that. Anyway. Shazam, a 17th century hombre steps out of the church, toting a musket, but then eventually simmers down and offers them some food and directions to wherever they're going to lie about going. And they say, well, you know what, we're going to an inn somewhere, that's going to be great. And the man, oh, by the way, this man basically looks like the Doctor, but with a beard. He's definitely popping a screenshot. In fact, I'm popping like a Pepsi Challenge style before and after screenshot. You can pick your favorite. Anyway, his name is Joseph Longfoot, and we learn that he is the church warden, and that he is dreading the arrival of some shifty MFers, spoiler alert, pirates, led by a dude, whom I've got down in my notes as Pike's Hook, but who is actually Captain Pike. So I must have misheard that. Anyway, Longford first insists that they stay, then tells them to leave, then asks the Doctor to stay so that he can tell him to be careful at the inn, then he leaves, and then he stays just so that he can say,
remember these words. This is Dead Man's Secret Key. Smallwood, Ringwood, Gurney.
Like, just this random collection of words, very clearly a riddle, whatever it is, and he has no reason whatsoever to share this, to impart this secret knowledge. But he does so, possibly he's fearing for his life, whatever, maybe he figures, hey, the Doctor, he looks kind of like me, gotta be trustworthy, maybe he's my long-lost twin, who shaved. Whatever. While he shares this riddle or this rhyme or whatever it is, we're gonna find out later on. Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, I just don't want to spoil it. While he's doing that, there is a bald man in the background spying on them. Vord style. Do you not know what Vord style is? Holy shit, this is your first episode of Who Back When. Vords, you know what? Go back and listen to our review of The Keys of Marinus. Fantastic classic episode, and, biased though I am, a pretty freaking hilarious review. Anyway, yeah. Okay. They leave the church, and we end this scene of this kid-friendly family show, by the way, with the bald chap unsheathing a massive stabbing weapon, going, "That's not a knife, this is a knife," and going for the church warden. Sorry, Australia, by the way, awful accent work there on my part, I am fully aware of that. And then all of a sudden, we get some actual video footage. And by the way, I'll say this right up front, there are lots of scenes in this four-part serial, in this four-episode arc, where we get, like, oh, here are 3 seconds of video footage, here are 7 seconds of video footage, and clearly bits and pieces have remained. And holy shit, I don't know if anyone associated with Loose Cannon Productions is listening, or anyone out there in podcast land knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who was affiliated with Loose Cannon Productions. But oh my god, they did an amazing job here. I mean, there's so very little footage, so very little material, even photos from the serial left. There's just the audio and a few stray seconds here and there of video, and they have meticulously plonked those bits and pieces of video in their little collage. Very well done. I raise my beaker in your general direction. It's actually a bottle of beer. Chin chin. Yum. Okay, anyway, whatever. So we get some actual footage. It's a cutscene of some chap dispatching a young lad to go and bring Longfoot a message. Whatever. Cut to the inn, the keeper of which is called Keeper, and who will only trust them if they give him Longfoot's name, which is just... What? Like, merely knowing the chap's name doesn't make them trustworthy or eliminate the possibility that they're murderers, liars, thieves, kidnappers, blackmailers, or arsonists. All of which, by the way, the doctor who subsequently drops Longfoot's name fucking is. Whatevs. Dry clothes are dispensed at no cost, it seems, for Ben and Polly. And Polly, by the way, is mistaken for a lad as well, because she's wearing trousers. The doctor actually brings this up. He instigates it. He goes, yeah, yeah, fetch some clothes for the boys. But even though she is quite obviously a woman, and infinitely cleaner, more softly spoken, more attractive, and more devoid of Adam's apples than everyone else in this entire serial, yes, she is the only female character in this entire four-part serial. Jesus Christ. They make the only woman in the entire story pretend to be a man. Ridiculous. Oh, God. All right. Oh, shit. Oh, and I totally forgot to mention, there's an instance of the Davis principle here. Because when they arrive in the inn, we find out they now have to wait for the tide to recede, because the TARDIS is now underwater, just like in The Time Meddler. Oh my god, you totally need to watch that serial and listen to that review, by the way. Yeah, yeah. Another fun Who Back When extravaganza. I'm just plugging this podcast shamelessly. Okay, so we cut to the church where Crocodile Dundee surprises Longfoot with his knife, IDs him as Joe Longfoot, a shipmate of the Black Albatross, and says he owes Captain Pike the whereabouts of some hidden treasure. Oh my goodness, very exciting stuff. And when Longfoot refuses to reveal the whereabouts to him, by the way, Dundee's real name is Cherub, not that it matters. When he refuses to reveal the whereabouts to Cherub, whatever, oh, whatever, Dundee, Dundee assumed the doc and his two lads, quote-unquote, now know where the treasure is, and B, he shitting throws a knife at Longfoot, hitting him in the back and straight up murdering him on this kid-friendly family show, which is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And let's just... you know, guess what, Dundee? You just killed the only person you know for certain knows the whereabouts of the treasure in favor of some unfounded hypothesis about the doctor. You're an idiot, Dundee. You're an absolute moron. He could have questioned him. He did not. He could have... taken him back to Captain Pike. He did not. There is all manner of stuff he could have done that may have led him to the information that he's after, but instead, all he does is freaking kill the guy. Makes no sense. Oh, and by the way, we have video footage of that as well. That clip somehow survived. Nice one. And it's violent as shit. Back in the inn, meanwhile, Tom, possibly the young lad from before? I think he was, yes. He bursts in and announces that Longfoot's bought the farm. And consequently, Keeper sends him off to go find the magistrate. Then, boom, Dundee pops in and threatens Doc and Co. Actually, even grabs Polly and, like, holds her in place. Still doesn't realize that even if she were a lad, she'd have a pretty bombastically gorgeous woman's body. And then, Shazam, Sam, Ben and Doc are bludgeoned, and Doc's carried off by some of the other men in the inn, I think? I'm not entirely sure what happened there. Lots of people carry him onto a cart. And we get this really shitty scene, actually. Again, surviving video footage of them plonking him on a cart. Like, there's... I wonder if it's an outtake that survived, because there are, like, props in the foreground, in the background, whatever. There are props on set that actually, like, fall over and stuff in this little scene. It's very weird. And then the magistrate arrives, and, okay, he's a fat prick. He is a fat prick who refuses to indulge Polly and Ben, and he refuses to go rescue the doc, because he suspects that they are behind the murder of the churchwarden. So he just flat out arrests them, and tells them they'll go to court, which, let's see here, if he's a magistrate, isn't that sort of inappropriate? I mean, is he going to arrest them and judge them? And BP, that's Ben and Polly, they don't say a solitary goddamn peep about how Crocodile Dundee freaking confessed to Longford's murder mere moments earlier. They're practically begging for wrongful imprisonment. Meh. We end episode one on Doc, now aboard a open brackets pirate, close bracket ship, and being introduced to Captain Pike, who also, for no reason, believes Doc must know the whereabouts of the treasure, and subsequently ham-fists his own name into the closing line.
Well, by thunder, you'll talk to me! Or my name's not Samuel Pike!
I'd give this guy an exposition 5, but he's missing a hand, and instead of that, or even instead of a hook, he has what looks like a miniature Batleth poking out of his frilly cuffs. Trivia point, Pike is played by a chap named Michael Godfrey, who also appeared in an episode of the 1964-1968 Sherlock Holmes TV show, namely in 1968, when the titular detective was actually being played by, wait for it, the non-canonical Doctor Who alum, Peter effing Cushing. Boom. 6 degrees of Peter Cushing all over again. All right, end of episode one, or part one, and we go on to part two, where we learn a little bit of the pirate backstory. Dundee, Batleth, and Longfoot, or let's call him Big Toe, or whatever he was called. The churchwarden is what I'm trying to say. They used to be shipmates serving under the famous pirate Avery. Big Toe took Avery's treasure. No idea how he managed to do that. But this is now why Dundee killed him, right? What? His interrogation techniques clearly leave something to be desired. He even says Big Toe died before he spoke to him. Like, Big Toe volunteered to be ninja killed by Shiver Me Timber. As Mr. Bald Pirate of the Year, Crocodile Dundee, the massive git. Whatever. Cherub says, that's Dundee. He says he wants the doc to give him a blowjob. Soundbite.
Let me give him a taste of Thomas Tickler.
Or possibly he'll just kill the shit out of him. I'm assuming he's referring to his knife. Okay. And it gets really freaking vicious at this point. He starts listing ways to torture and kill people, referring to what, quote, the Indians do to people's eyelids, end quote. Pretty dark stuff that I'm sure didn't give any kids in 1966 nightmares for life. They probably didn't pee their pants when Batleth then threatens to cut out Doc's tongue either. That's all fine and age appropriate. Yeah, well done. Whatever. Doc starts appealing to Batleth's ego, and soon he's sipping wine with him and asking for a share of the booty, while Dundee looks on angrily. Then suddenly some dude approaches in a rowboat. We find out from another shipmate, a man named Jamaica, who, by the way, not the first time in 1960s Doctor Who, but certainly the first time in a long time, a black guy. So far, every single person is a pasty white English dude, in most cases, even when they're playing black guys. They are white dudes in blackface. It's been horrendously offensive up until this point. Well, not up until this point. There have been other non-white actors on the show, but it is, at least it's slowly but surely getting to that point where it's, I guess, normalized on TV. I'm not entirely sure what the politics were like at the BBC. But still, you know, he's obviously a minority in the show. Everyone else is white. Oh, and yeah. Actually, you know what? Fuck it. Forget what I'm saying. I've already said that. Everyone else is a dude. Okay. Ugh. All right. Sorry. 12:45. Here we go. Meanwhile, in a jail cell, we learn that Polly's afraid of rats, but mega proactive. She's going to use the 17th century people's superstitions against them. Here's hoping whatever she's got planned is really clever. Well, you can't have everything. She makes a doll out of hay, and we get, like, 5 minutes of them quite easily convincing Tom, the young lad, that the Doc's a warlock. They're his apprentices. And the hay, what's it, is a voodoo doll, and that it contains Tom's freaking soul. And now Tom has to cooperate to save it. What utter bullshit. This is definitely in hand with being a kid's show, I admit. But given that they've already broken all those barriers myriad times in this episode already, why not just do the obvious instead? Why not have Polly flash the guy through the bars, and then Ben bash his brains in when he enters the cell to give her tits a nice squeeze? Fucking amateurs. Whatever. It works, and Tom releases them, and we don't get to see Potley topless after all. And they've got a plan, and consequently, I've got a bone to pick with them again. They're going to go to the church to gather clues to the Doctor's current whereabouts, and...
and maybe find out who really killed the church warden.
But you goddamn idiots, you know who killed him. It was freaking Dundee. Polly and Ben, remember when you were in the inn and Crocodile Dundee, Mr. Bald Pirate of the Year, threatened to kill you with his enormous knife just like he did Big Toe? Does that sound like the kind of thing that would maybe slip your minds? Dundee fucking confessed to them and now they are off to gather clues to the murder of the church warden. Ridiculous. It's like, that scene is the Yeti of this story. Whatever. Turns out it was Keeper who popped by the ship. He has some smuggling to commission from Batleth and his crew. But Batleth and Dundee take him prisoner instead. Not entirely sure why. They head off, and they leave Jamaica as a guard, and then head ashore. Cut to the church crypt, where BP see a hidden wall panel open, and some dude, with hair, steps out. Boom. Ben knocks him cold, and Polly speculates that it might be the killer, because she still doesn't remember that the bald guy confessed. Ugh. She plops off to get the fat magistrate. Ben stays put, which is hilarious, by the way, because obviously the magistrate isn't going to chop her hands off for escaping in the first place, Nespam. Yeah, yeah, sure. Non-bald man wakes up now. We learn he's Blake, a revenue man, which is, I guess, like a tax officer or something. Maybe he's like an agent with the IRS in the US or the HMRC in the UK. OMG. Yada, yada, yada. Dundee and Batleth chat with the magistrate. I don't know, let's call him Tubbs. He's a very corpulent gentleman. And at this point, I sort of zoned out, so I'm not entirely sure what their plan is exactly, but it is... okay, this is now very obviously a paraphrase, or a loose interpretation. Tubbs has some stuff that he wants them to transport elsewhere. Okay, the reason I'm a little bit flummoxed by this is that Tubbs very clearly... we find this out later, by the way. This is now me retrospectively going, actually, this was super clear. At the time, I didn't get it. But so Tubbs very clearly has his hands on some booty. And he wants these two chaps, Batleth and Crocodile Dundee, to help him ferry it off somewhere else. So he basically wants them to smuggle this shit on his behalf. Which, I would assume, means that he will, I guess, sell it to them at, below RRP, and then they sell it for slightly less below RRP to some merchant somewhere else, and it's the transport of said goods that is illegal. It's not the selling of it, it's the transport of it. That's why they're there. But, in order to even get this meeting with him, Batleth pretends to be this super sophisticated gentleman, this man of the world, this sophisticated. Like, he doesn't need to. If he's gonna be a criminal, then he might as well just go, listen, I'm a criminal, I know my shit, you can trust me because I do this for a living. He doesn't have to pretend like, hey, you know what, I'm the Monopoly man, and also, like, you know, I'm one of you guys, I don't know what being a criminal is like, but yeah, you should employ me to do criminal activities. This is why I'm saying I'm not entirely sure what their plan was. Alright, Shazam. Polly storms in and fingers Dundee and Batleth, figuratively, as the perpetrators of the Doctor's nightmarish kidnapping. Funny that she should remember that, but not the fact that one of them also confessed to the murder to which she still stands accused. Ugh, I will not get over that. Anyway, let's bullet point the end of this episode. A. Keeper is now on Doc's side. B. Doc has a plan to get them out there and draws Jamaica's attention. C. Polly is obviously reapprehended by Tubbs. D. Ben appears from the tunnel in the wall to say it leads straight to the TARDIS. And lastly, E. Shazam, Tubbs, Dundee, Batleth, and Polly appear in the crypt, and Tubbs trains a loaded musket at Ben and the Blakemeister. End of part 2. Part 3. Holy shit. Part 3 starts with a bit of a mind twister, because in the space of about 1 minute, Ben and Polly are tied to a pillar, then Blake is found tied up, and then suddenly he is no longer tied up in order to take Ben and Polly into custody, and suddenly neither of them is tied up anymore either. So, whatever. They leave. Meanwhile, Doc appears to be laying tarot cards for Keeper on the ship. Keeper? Cooper, whatever. While Jamaica looks on. Well, you know, they're regular cards, but the gist is the same. He's basically doing the same thing Polly did before, i.e. pretending to be a mage or a warlock or whatever. So, you know, what are the odds of that? That's pretty clever writing, probably, and not at all a question of lacking creativity on the part of the writer. Doesn't matter. Jamaica is completely tricked by this. He is bamboozled to turn his back on them, and Shazam, at that moment, is bludgeoned muy pronto. And Doc and Keeper subsequently escape. Cut to Dundee and Bantleth giving Tubbs' ego a generous HJ and Tubbs subsequently splooging the awful truth over both of them. He's a smuggler. This is where we find out, basically. And by the way, and like I said, it's very possible that this was known all along, but I did not catch it. Anyway, he revealed a secret tomb full of rum, silk, and wine, I think. And it's not a big tomb. Like, you don't need a fucking ship to transport it. You could put it in a couple of Samsonites, I'm pretty sure. Is Tubbs really making his fortune with this loot? Whatever. Oddly, Dundee isn't officially to know about this. I'm not entirely sure why that is. So instead, he, once again, Vord hides nearby and eavesdrops on them. And then Batleth and Tubbs leave to jack each other off of dinner. And we cut to Blakehammer, that's the IRS guy, Benny, and Polly. I'll think of a name for her later as well. Blake, that's Blakehammer, releases BP, that's Ben and Polly, Benny and Polly, ugh, who apparently were tied up again, by the way, and explains that rumor has it the Squire, that is Tubbs, is in fact a smuggler king, so Blake is clearly a good guy. He is on the side of justice. Ta-da! Doc and Keeper appear. And I really don't get what happens here either, but Keeper, who by the way is sometimes referred to as Cooper, Cooper or Keeper, says Dundee be the murderer, and then unholsters a gun that he got who knows where, and dashes off, firing a shot at the Blakehammer as he leaves. And on the ship, meanwhile, in this kids' show, Batleth straight up murders Jamaica with, appropriately, his Batleth hook thing, and then wipes the blood off it with a silk hanky and lets it fall down dramatically onto Jamaica's bloody, lifeless, open-eyed, terrified-looking corpse for every child watching this in 1966 to soil themselves at. Well done, BBC. Batleth, anyway, is going to go sack the church, and so they set sail. Blakehammer rides off as well, I think, to fetch reinforcements, to combat Batleth and Tubbs, and Doc explains to Benny and Polly, I really have to think of a name for her. If anyone has a suggestion for what she should be called, let me know on Twitter. Here are some nicknames we've given companions in the past. Vicky was Vic's Vapor Rub. Dodo was Dildo. Ian was Chesterfield's. Sometimes Yon or Eon. Susan was Susie, obviously. Pretty sure she was referred to as Zach Braff at one point as well, because she looked exactly like him, I think. Yeah. I think that was an Edge of Destruction. That's Edge of Discretion to you and me. Anyway, now I'm getting all nostalgic, sentimental. Ah, can you blame me? We've done a lot of these episodes. All right, where was I? Yeah, so Doc tells Benny and Polly that they can't head off yet because he feels responsible for the imminent destruction of the village through his influence on Batleth, I suppose, which means that you can change history, right? He has caused this, or he is about to have caused this, contrary to what he's said in about a million other episodes of this show. Oh, and it also means that he's now suddenly grown a moral core. I mean, he's always been a good guy, but, you know, where, pray tell, Doc Meister, was this conscience when you caused all of ancient Rome to burn, for example? Yeah, whatever. Soundbite time, as Benny refers to the villagers, thusly.
They're a right bunch of yobbos.
Yobbos, whatever that means. English slang. Oh, it's so quaint. Contextually, I'm assuming it means something along the lines of cock hats. Or idiots, probably. British listeners will either agree or disagree. Fellow non-Brits will express confusion through awkward laughter and lateral head oscillations. Don't worry, guys, I'm right there with you. Kablamo! Doc says Big Toe revealed an important clue as to the whereabouts of the hidden treasure to him. Remember the riddle-type thing in part one? And off they go. We get a cutscene, literally, as Dundee gives young lad Tommy a Colombian necktie, and then another scene as Cooper, a.k.a. Cooper, a.k.a. Trapper Cooper, NLP's Tubbs, into understanding the truth about Pike, that's Batleth to you and me, and convinces him to organize an ambush on the one-handed chap after he no doubt has excavated the treasure from beneath the church. Shazam, says Tubbs, and mounts what must be both the strongest and saddest horse in Cornwall. He's very corpulent. Okay, in the churchyard now. Doc, Benny, and Polly. Seriously, what do I call her? They're looking around, and Benny spots a gravestone with an odd epitaph, namely...
Henry Oxford, he did die of drinking too much small beer when he was dry.
Boom. Doc figures it out with the aid of Polly, fumbles over a line.
Good heavens, what an imposition. Well... You are inspired. Come on, quickly.
And they speed off to the crypt to look for different names on tombstones. At this point in my notes, by the way, I've written, why the shit would Longford, that's Big Toe, by the way, have shared the riddle with the Dockmeister? Like, there is genuinely no reason for him to do this. It is flummoxing. And you know what, Past Punkin? That's a bloody good question. Let's go on. They're looking for one more name. Small Beer, I think it was. And I wonder if we've heard that before, eh? Namely, on the tomb just a moment ago. I'm pretty sure there was a fun epitaph. You made a huge deal of reading it aloud, of showing us the tombstone, right? It was something about small beers when you've run dry or whatever it was. Now we're looking for someone named Small Beer. Pretty sure they are looking... I realize... I'm saying pretty sure because I realize there's a risk that I may have misheard. But I am fucking completely convinced that they are looking for someone named Small Beer. If they've even gone so far as to ham-fist that fucking tombstone, very obviously it's going to be there, right? It's so incredibly clear. Guess what, everyone in podcast land? That's not it. It's a red herring, but it doesn't even pay off as a red herring. There's never a scene where we get them going, oh shit, I totally thought it was that, but it turns out it's something else. That was very clever of Trapper Cuba. Oh, so disillusioned. All right. Shazam, in plop Tubbs and Trapper Cooper. They enter stage and they point a Glock at their asses. And Tubbs now suddenly professes to be a gentleman. And, as everyone knows, gentlemen don't kill in cold blood. So while he and Trapper Cooper argue about whether to kill the two young men, Benny and Polly, Dundee arrives as well and once again ninjas someone in the back. This time, Trapper Cooper. Trapper Cooper falls to the ground, fires a shot, Tubbs bellows, Dundee shouts at them, Dockmeister pleads for mercy, Benny's no where to be seen or heard, and we end the episode on the image of Polly screaming her in no way boyish, let alone manly, lungs out, and clasping her own face in fear, and only now do we find out that she has fucking enormous man hands. No wonder her vagina went under the radar. These pirate dirtbags are ignoring her beautiful face and her female physique in favor of her gargantuan mitts. End of part 3, part 4. Boom. Tubbs is shot. Dying, in fact. Is he gonna die? Nope. Spoiler alert, sorry. And we get the image that everyone who's Google image searched Doctor Who the Smugglers will have seen. Namely, that of Dundee holding onto Polly and pointing a musket at her head. The same musket, by the way, with which Trapper Cooper just shot Tubbs, and that undoubtedly only holds one bullet at a time. Details. The following scene in the recon describes Blake Hammer as, quote, riding hard. he falls off his horse and it gallops away. Okay, that was worth it. Why do I mention that? Because it wasn't worth it. Because it also does not pay off. That's yet another one of those throwaway cutscenes that matter in absolutely no way whatsoever. It's like, that's the only footage of a horse we got. It was meant to be just him riding across the distance, but maybe he just fell off the horse. Well, fuck it. We don't have time or resources to do a reshoot. Let's just keep that. Fine, it's pretty realistic. People fall off horses all the time. Okay, and we also get another cutscene as Batleth and his men arrive ashore, and he dispatches another lazily named member of his crew to go find Dundee, namely a man called Spaniard. So we have Jamaica and Spaniard. Jesus. And for a moment there, I actually thought Spaniard would be the fucking Yeti of this story, because does Batleth need him in order to find the Doctor? Nope. Batleth is now entering the crypt and in the process of murdering Dundee, sans Spaniard. But Spaniard, let's call him Spaniel, we might as well. Alas, he is outside getting drunk on rum, along with the rest of Batleth's men, because that's their work ethic. Yada yada yada. Doc and Co. still do not escape, because Doc doesn't want Tubbs to die on his watch. I swear, the next time he lets some innocent bystander die, I'm referring him back to this scene. Dundee almost blows Batleth's head off with a second shot from his one-bullet musket. Benny and Polly leave through the tunnel, and then Doc and all the kids in 1966 get to watch as Batleth violently stabs Dundee to death with his monster hook. And now Doc is negotiating with him. Cut to the beach, where a couple of Pike's dudes have found the TARDIS. Spoiler alert, pointless cutscene, makes zero difference. Okay, back out of the cutscene, Blake Hammer has arrived with his militia as well. So, just to clarify, that bit where he fell off his horse before, it was pretty yeti-tastic as well. I mean, it's not like he didn't get to his militia. He clearly got there, and in fact, he clearly got there on time. He's back on the beach with time to spare. Alright. Just dawn on me, okay, if this is your first episode of Who Back When, why do I keep referring to Yetis? Here you go. Yetis, there's a little bit of, sorry, ladies and gentlemen who have listened to Who Back When before and who are not interested in Yetis but are really into pirates, this is a tiny non-pirate tangent. In the episode, or sorry, in the serial, Marco Polo, there's a little bit of, there's a point of contention here. In the very opening of that serial, which I reviewed with former co-host Flapjack, we discussed that all of a sudden a Yeti turns up, scares the shit out of Barbara, former companion, Barb, Babs, further examples of nicknames, and then just effed off screen, never to be heard or seen or spoken of again in the entire serial. We're clearly in a world where there are Yetis, but let's just not mention that we saw one. I mean, who cares, right? Not that special. Since then, whenever something like that happens, they're Yetis. Congratulations, you are now up to speed with Who Back When. That's how we roll, man. That is how we roll. Or woman, I do not discriminate. Back to the smugglers. So, Doc helps Batleth find the hidden treasure, and just as Batleth starts jizzing all over it, the curse of Avery's treasure comes true, as fighting is heard from outside. And Shazam, he draws his cutlass and heads out. Polly, meanwhile, is intercepted by more pirates, but possibly the same ones from before, I'm not entirely sure. Ben Jason Statham's another pirate, and then the two of them attack the shit out of Spaniard, until Blake suddenly shows up and shoots him, on this kid's show. Boom. Batleth and his men are dying left, right, and center, and Ben shows up and begs Doc to come with him, but Doc, like a freaking madman, still refuses to leave without checking on Tubbs. Why? Tubbs is a buffoon. He's an idiot. He was clearly up to no good, yeah? Just because he didn't want to murder people doesn't mean that he's a good guy. He got Ben and Polly arrested. Batleth takes the opportunity to attack the Doc now, but fortunately the Blakemeister shoots him with a second round from his one-bullet musket, killing him completely, totally 100% murdering him. And the Doc then heads off and joins Ben and Polly at the TARDIS. And Blake first goes, oh man, where's that strange old fellow? I really want to thank him for all of his good work. But then when he spots the tunnel door wide open, he just goes, nah, what a bollock, I'm not getting in there. I've got allergies, guys. What a lazy bastard. Boom. The TARDIS dematerializes and we end the serial on the Doctor proclaiming, wait for it.
Just look up at that scanner. We have arrived at the coldest place in the world.
Text plate, next week, the 10th planet. And you know what? I haven't seen it yet, but I better look pretty goddamn unique if I am to believe that the Doctor looked up at the scanner and immediately ascertained where he was. Kablamo, end of the smugglers.
Review.
Okay, I'm going to speed through this as well. Here's what I think. This is Hartnell's penultimate trip. Okay, and in the last few adventures that he's been on, the Doctor has, he's not had much agency, and he's actually not been very present. But in this one, he is present. And it may be silly, and it may be completely nonsensical at times, like, why are you staying on screen, Doc? You should be running away from the guys with bullets. But I'm glad that he doesn't. And it's possible that he doesn't because they absolutely, deliberately do not want to write him out at this stage. They already know, I'm sure everyone already knows, he's got one more adventure in him. That's it. He has one more serial, The 10th Planet, and then he is off the show. I'm thankful that we have this William Hartnell adventure where he is clever and... Okay, he's not really witty in this one, but he is clever and he is... He has agency is what I'm trying to say. So it's his second to last trip. It is, meanwhile, Polly's and Ben's first trip. We have new companions. I mean, well, we have new companions. We met them in the War Machines. But in this case, or in this serial, this is the first time they actually ever get to travel through space and time. It's amazing. These guys have agency. Holy shitballs. I mean, they are such alphas, both of them. They just want to do stuff. They want to solve problems. They want to go places. They want to do things. They want to see stuff. They want to just fix it. And they're not quite at the stage where Ian and Babs were, but very possibly they will be. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the rest of their run yet. They have tremendous chemistry. We already pointed this out in The War Machines, and we do get to see quite a lot of that here as well. Not as much as in that one, but I think that's very much down to the fact that she's in drag, and she can't really act like herself, in a way. Part of the chemistry that between them that we really enjoyed in The War Machines was that sort of flirtatious nature between the two of them, but in this case, they are constantly in peril, and, you know, what? I'm not surprised. They are, for the first time, in a time that is alien to their own, in a place that is, you know, Cornwall, which is a lovely place, by the way, but maybe 17th century Cornwall is scary as balls if you're from 1966. I wouldn't be surprised. So they don't really get to exercise their chemistry, but you can tell that it's there. There's a little bit less of the action that we saw in The War Machines, but you know what? Seriously, you need to listen to our review of War Machines as well. Just to, if nothing else, then to put this into context. Actually, strike that. If for no other reason than because it is fucking amazeballs. I was joined by both classic and new Who co-hosts for that one. JD and Nicolelli. Yeah. Anyway, in this one, production value is pretty low. And, you know, they may have blown their wad on the War Machines, and presumably in the 10th Planet as well. I mean, with Cybermen and I'm pretty sure I've seen images of just these massive, elaborate, expansive sets. So this is, even though it's obviously not a bottle episode, but there are pretty much only three sets that we see. That's it. Well, not three sets. There are three rooms that we see. That's it. That's the whole serial. Doesn't matter, though. The story... The story's pretty flat too, and the challenges that they face are pretty celestial toy makery. I mean, for crap's sake, the writer even recycled the same bit in that both Polly, really need to find a name for her, and Doc, in separate episodes and on separate locations, both play the superstition card. That's pretty lazy, yeah? Next up, sexism. It's 1966, and I'm gonna maybe start this one off a little bit surprisingly and go, there's no sexism in this one. But the reason there's no sexism in this one is that there are no women to be sexist against or towards, except Polly, who pretends to be a man. But the thing is, BBC, the complete absence of women is in itself evidence of sexism, so what the shit, dudes? Seriously, I'm sure there were plenty of interesting female characters that you could have chosen between. Someone, you could have written someone into this. For God's sake, you have Polly there. Make use of her. She is a new companion. She proved in The War Machines that she was fantastically charismatic on stage, on screen. She's adventurous and alluring and clever and she's a fucking go-getter. She is an alpha, yeah? Make use of that character. But you don't. You put her in trousers and then you pretend that there are no women in Cornwall. That's ridiculous. Despite that, though, and it may seem a little bit of a contrast, this is great. This is the show teasing the revival of William Hartnell as the titular character before his final bombastic battle and his subsequent regeneration into Patrick Troughton. It's amazing. I am so pleased. I am incredibly pleased. And for that reason, I'm a little bit torn. So what I actually have in front of me here now are all the scores that I have given classic Doctor Who historicals. And it's tough to put this into context. We have on Who Back When, so far we've always said, you know what, we don't really like the historicals that much. But looking at the scores, we have actually given them pretty good ratings. The thing is, I stand by it. I much prefer the sci-fi stories to the historicals or even the pseudo-historicals. But still, looking at classic Hartnell historicals, the BBC did well. The lowest one was The Gunfighters for us. I gave that 2.0, but that's only because it's slapstick and utter bullshit. Actually, looking back on it, it's kind of fun, yeah? But then we have fantastic stories like Reign of Terror, 4.1, Marco Polo, 4.4, and that's despite it being completely missing. Blah, 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 blah. Within that context, I'm going to have to say, this is not the worst historical we've had. It's certainly not the best. It's nothing compared to Reign of Terror. It doesn't have the production value or the adventure or the educational aspect of the Aztecs. It doesn't have the expansive plot, the road trip quality of Marco Polo, and it doesn't have the charismatic actors of the Crusade or the Romans. I'm giving the Smugglers 2.5. And we have a listener mini. Bing bong, bing bong. This one comes from Steven. Frequent contributor to the show, Steve Meister. How are you doing? All rad. Very good. Up top, dude. Ching. That was a podcast high five. Steven writes, The Smuggler's marks the first TARDIS adventure of companions Ben and Polly, and the next-to-last TARDIS adventure of the First Doctor, and all three are in fine form. I just said that. That's amazing. Okay, he goes on. A companion's first time or space travel adventure in the TARDIS is a favourite moment of mine throughout Doctor Who. While disbelieving at first, Ben and Polly are quick to realise that, yes, they have travelled in time, and are just as quick to adapt. A far cry from their immediate predecessor, who spent much of her first TARDIS trip thinking they were in a zoo. Very good point. Yes. Ugh. Hated her. Polly, in particular, using the superstition of the day to help herself and Ben. Ben, as well, when he's confronted with the revenue man, is smart enough not to just take things at face value. Even if, in that case, the man was exactly as he claimed. Ben was being fairly sensible. The Doctor as well shows his wit in being able to escape Pike's custody and later outmaneuver the pirates in keeping the treasure out of his reach for just long enough. Actually, that's a good point. I didn't really give the Doctor enough credit there. I take it back. Nice one, Stephen. And also, yes, I did not give that enough emphasis. Holy shit, it is their first space and time travel. It's so important. Oh my god. At some point, okay, when we do the Hartnell retrospective, which we will do in two Classic Who episodes time, well, in one Classic Who's episodes time, we will have to go through the companions' first times. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. Stephen goes on. Just as in the Savages, you can see the Doctor's development into a heroic character compared to how he started. Ben is right that they have no ties to that era. In fact, as the Doctor is the only one who knows the secret of Avery's gold, leaving could even thwart Pike. However, the Doctor feels morally obligated to stay and prevent any death or destruction he can. An enjoyable story, particularly in seeing this new troop in action. Ben and Polly made a good companion team alongside the Doctor. I'm sure there are some glaring plot holes or nonsensical moments, but listening to the audiobook, nothing really caught my attention, and I'm inclined to let things like that slide unless they do just that. Holy shit, dude, you listened to the audiobook. Okay, now I'm thinking I really should listen to this audiobook. Alright, nice one. He goes on, while a good story, I didn't really feel it stood out enough to merit higher than 4, and a 3.5 feels too low, so I'm meeting in the middle and calling it 3.7 out of 5. Nice one, okay. I would say, dude, you have a huge freaking heart. That's a bit more, that's 1.2 more than I'm prepared to give it, but you know what? I respect your opinion. He's not done yet, though, ladies and gentlemen. Stephen adds, finally, a little bit of trivia. Have you noticed that, with the exception of Dodo and Katarina, nearly every one of the First Doctor's companions had their first adventure take place in the past? Yes, you're right. Okay, yeah, he goes on. Ian and Barbara in prehistoric era, Vicky and Rome, Stephen in the Middle Ages, and now Ben and Polly here. Even Sarah Kingdom counts, if you consider the 20th century a past era for her, had her first trip to go to the past. The second bit of trivia is that Pike was once a pirate under the pirate Avery. Assuming it's the same man, we would go on to actually meet Avery in the 11th Doctor's The Curse of the Black Spot. Holy crap, that is insane. I had completely forgotten about this. That is a fantastic connection. Well done, dude. Well done. Ugh. Okay, one last line. He adds, surprisingly, I don't recall the episode making any reference to this past encounter with one of Avery's former crew. Yeah, I don't remember that either, but, I mean, that will surprise no one in podcast land. My memory is like a sieve. When we get to the Curse of the Black Spot, sweet Christmas, we are absolutely going to have to make a note of that. Steve Meister, I order you. I order you to remind me when we get to that episode. Okay? Fantastic. Dude, thank you so much for an awesome mini review. Very good points. I'm pretty much on board with everything you say about it, except for the rating. And I think it's a fantastic point to talk about the companions. This is, I really want to talk more about it right now. I'm going to save it for the Hartnell retrospective though, because I think that's super important. Okay, dude, thanks very much. People who are not Stephen, are you following Stephen on Twitter? Are you not? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take two fingers and, in a very professional manner, press them against your wrist and check if you have a pulse. Because if you do, then it is your goddamn duty to follow him on Twitter. He is at sgamer82. That is 82, the number. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm pretty sure that concludes this episode of Who Back When. You've been a treat. Thank you for listening to me babble on for a little over an hour. I'm not sure what this is going to end up as after I've edited it. But you know what? I've been here talking completely by myself into a microphone in an otherwise empty room for an hour and 4 minutes. Yeah, so I'm about to go a little bit bonkers. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to follow me on Twitter, you are more than welcome to do so. As you well know, my friends call me Ponkin, and thus my Twitter handle is also at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Okie dokie. Catch you in the next episode of Who Back When. If it's a classic, it's going to be The Tenth Planet, the very last Hartnell extravaganza. It's got Cybermen. It's pretty kick-ass, I am sure. If you're thinking in terms of New Who, it's going to be, appropriately, Rise of the Cybermen. Yes, that's right. The Cybermen Revival. With Tennant. Pretty badass. Not a bad review either, I can tell you that for shizzle, because we've already recorded it. And if you're thinking in terms of audiobook reviews, it's gonna be Wirren Dawn. And spoiler alert, I was not a huge fan of that one, to say the least. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. Catch you in the next one. Rock on, be rad and excellent to each other, and ciao. Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's at Who Back When. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?